Hi everyone, welcome at RaveAct. Today we have a super special guest, Saul Tarazona, who's the CEO of E-Jet Aerospace. And they have been up for super crazy exciting stuff. And basically what they're doing is they have built a eVTOL, basically an electric vehicle. So as you, as a human being, you can get into that vehicle and fly from point A to point B, and it's just much cheaper, much more affordable, faster, and of course better for the environment as well. So as you can see, Ernesto is already super excited for this episode. So let's get started.
WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi, Saul. Great to have you here. Really curious about your journey and your company. So let me just start with the most basic question at all. Like, why did you actually start with your company, and what is your superior motivation behind all of that?
Behind all that, we believe we can make aviation affordable for the masses. We can make aviation a routine thing for everybody, as it is to ride a car or ride a bicycle to move from point A to point B. That's what we believe we can do.
And why is it important for you personally, right? Because there are many things we can improve in the world, but why did you choose this?
Yeah, so there's many problems, of course, more important problems like water, food, shelter, of course. What we're able to give the world is a transportation solution, which can transport food, can transport people, can do medical evacuation, can be used on emergency situations, can be used to help people on any circumstance that they needed the most. So we that's what we're able to do. We're very passionate about aviation. We love these machines. I am an aeronautical engineer. That's my background from that. That's what we want. We want to give the world a better way to move or to conquer Earth. We haven't conquered Earth even now. We're thinking about Mars. We're thinking about the moon again. But what about Earth? Let's move around Earth instead of using fossil fuels. We can do it so much better.
That's a really interesting perspective. I'm just, you know, assuming you're sitting there at some point in your life, you basically thought, okay, that's my background, and you might understand your industry well enough to see the opportunity to build something like that, so that this is actually possible from a technical, but also from a business perspective. When was that tipping point when you said, let's do it, and who you're going to do it with?
Well, I'm not the inventor of the technology, but Francois Oudbourg is the inventor of the cold jet propulsion, and he is the one that discovered something new in the branch of physics, actually in fluid dynamic physics. What his invention was, a technology that enables the aircraft to, it's a propulsion system. What is a propulsion system? It's an engine that is 100% electric and very, very high performance.
And how is it, you know, how is it different to existing electric vehicles, for example?
Yeah, so very simple terms without getting into too deep into technicalities. What other electric aircraft manufacturers use is an electric motor, and you attach a fixed pitch propeller. That's it, in an open air. That has been proved for many years that is not the most efficient and effective way to create propulsion. So what Francois created is way more smarter than that. Using advanced fluid dynamics physics, create a ducted fan that is a dual purpose, push and pull, with variable pitch, with so many other features that nobody, not even NASA, Pratt & Whitney, General Electric, Rolls-Royce, nobody has done before. So this is a brand new invention. This is unique. Only us got that propulsion system, nobody else in the world so far.
Okay, that's very interesting. And Where are you at in your let's say journey? Because what in the research I've seen that you have tested the concept, it's proven, you have the licenses and all these things. But what's the roadmap for 2024?
2024. So yes, as you said, we already patented the technology in 2013. We went through all the process. We designed the propulsion system. We got what they call the CAD and the CAM, the 3D design and the way how to produce the parts for the propulsion system and a one aircraft, because how good is an engine if I cannot use it in an aircraft? Yeah, we need a full solution. So people tend to say, oh, why don't you just focus on the propulsion system? But why? Why do we need to focus on just selling an engine for somebody else to use it? What is the most important thing is the propulsion system. The aircraft is just something additional to that. Yeah, propulsion system is 75% of the aircraft, 25% is the aircraft. So why are we not going to do it? We are aeronautical engineers. We know how to do it. We have done it before. Why not? So the 2024 will be, we already started with government funding from U.S. government, which is for, it's an investment on technology and research. SBIR is the name. That will help us get to contracts with very advanced things like U.S. Army, Ministry of MOD, emergency services, etc., NASA including. That will be one part, which is the defense side and emergency services. The other side will be to produce the full-size propulsion system, produce the full-size aircraft, and get it through the certification process. That's what we need to do.
Let's go 5 years into the future, or 10 years. What would be your best or ideal outcome? Like, what would you love to see your engine being used for, and what industry would you like to focus on?
Let's go with the civilian side. So we had that in 5 years, everybody should be able to ride one of these aircrafts to go to one place, not only for the urban air mobility, because we can do that and way more. Our range is 562 kilometers, 349 miles. So it's pretty big. I mean, that's between cities, even a state flight in the US. So we at that point, we should have a platform. Imagine like Uber, that you go pick up and say, oh, I want to go from this place to another place, and aircraft will go pick you up, take you there. Or ride a route. For example, there's pretty usable routes, like in New York, you can go Manhattan, LaGuardia, JF Kennedy, and so this kind of this triangle of the airports, or even Hamptons, or San Francisco, LA, day and night, Silicon Valley, LA, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Silicon Valley. These kind of routes that everybody wants to take in a car, that can do in a car, that they would rather do it in an aircraft that doesn't generate any carbon.
One thing, also I've read that obviously you can use existing helipads for land and start of your eVTOLs, but usually there's always this infrastructure problem, right? Whenever you're building a new vehicle or anything like that, just look at electric cars. Like, how do you already have a concept plan, or how you actually ensure that these aircraft are charged in a timely manner, how these are maintained, you know, because I assume when you can just order them on a platform, or if you collaborate with Uber, or I don't know what the goals are, that, you know, there's a lot of work around that. Like, what are your thoughts on all of this?
But number one, that is the simplest part. Let me tell you how. This is not high tech. This is super low tech. All I need, let me tell you, all I need is the size of a tennis court in a secure area. I need a toilet for the passengers to arrive at some point, get some amenities, some seating space, some living room kind of thing. We use that FBO in private aviation, but it's smaller. I don't need that huge size. It's not advanced. I need the size of a fridge to put many batteries on it. our batteries are hot swappable, so I don't need to wait for the aircraft to charge.
That's cool.
In 3 minutes, I change 4 batteries and we go to the next leg and the next leg. That's all I need. I mean, it's simple.
What are, you know, that now brings me to a really interesting point. Security. Because, mm-hmm. of course, it's not long distance. It's, mm-hmm. of course, but you still might need to obey certain, I have no idea about the US. Let's be clear on that. Like, what kind of regulations do you need to follow in terms of security that nobody, you know, if you go through the airport, you need to go through that security lane as well. Like, are those things there for air caps, for example, as well? Or how is it? Like,
let's make a case scenario. Where are you? Which city are you right now?
Austria, Central Europe.
Oh, okay. No, I wouldn't know the example. I will do an example in US. Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm speaking to you from Miami. So let's say I want to take one of these aircrafts in Miami International Airport. Very busy, congested. Okay, maybe I'm coming from Panama, or maybe I'm coming from South America, stopping in Miami, and then I want to go to Fort Lauderdale. But in good order for me, I landed in Miami International Airport instead of Fort Lauderdale Airport. But I actually need to take another flight in Fort Lauderdale Airport, which is 45 miles from Miami International Airport. So I can take a taxi, a normal taxi, or rent a car, go there. But instead, so you just arrive to Miami International Airport. You already did immigration. You are a foreign. You're not an American. Mm-hmm. You're a foreign person. You present your travel visa, business visa, tourist visa. You're already in, and you're already in the country. Now, inside the airport, I will be able to take you through a path to get to our helipad or our vertiport, which is, I'm going to pay for that. And there's heliports anywhere. We're going to be able to use the same infrastructure that exists, pick the passenger up, take it in less than 15 minutes, go drop him in Fort Lauderdale, my international airport. And he can take another international flight if he wants, or move around the US. He's already in.
Okay. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. I was more now on that point of view where you have, you know, I assume there are a lot of helipads that are not attached to an airport. That's where my thought was, right? But thinking about that, of course, helicopters are allowed to fly too, right? So there has to still there to be some kind of infrastructure. Absolutely makes sense. Just thinking about, let's go a little bit more technical. Electric vehicles have a different set of challenges than regular, you know, fossil fueled vehicles. Like, what would you say are the biggest or most impactful differences when designing a eVTOL versus a regular traditional aircraft?
So let's start with the positive things. We don't generate any carbon. We go faster. We go in almost the same or better luxury because there's no noise in the cabin. We can land in certain places that helicopters are not allowed because of the amount of noise and the fumes that they produce. So we're provide the same service, but even better because we will be able to land in different places. Like, I can use the ceilings, the roofs of certain places, like a big Walmart, a big Target, Whole Foods. I already have the parking, and they will be happy for me to drop people because they will have to go through the supermarket before they go and take their car. So these strategies will work very well. Our aircraft is only 1,200 kilograms. Mm-hmm. It can carry 3 people. It's super low cost. For us, our cost of operation per hour is $114. That's including the salary of the pilot, energy cost. The other thing, helicopters, yeah, most of the, let's say you and I, we go and rent a helicopter. It's going to cost us $600 to go for 1 hour of flight. But so we split it. We do that. Almost 50% of that amount that we pay goes to maintenance provision for the helicopter. But on us, I mean, how much maintenance do you do on a Tesla? I mean, you open that and what are you going to do with the car? Even if you're an expert, what are you going to clean? What are you going to service? There's no oil. There's no hydro. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's with very low maintenance, less parts that are going to fail. The reliability goes to the roof, lower cost. What is not to like?
The biggest, so before I jump to the next one, that's really interesting. And just wondering from a design perspective, right? Because in terms of physics and these kind of things, like what different design decisions did you have to make this as efficient as it is now, for example?
Yeah, we will, as in anything in all technology developments, we want to be first to market. Yeah, we want to have the advantage to hit the market first than anybody else. So since what we got is the propulsion system, and that's the most important thing we got, we call it SMAPAT, called the propulsion system. We need to use a platform, an aircraft, so fixed wing aircraft, we can use a helicopter, we can use, so helicopters are not compatible with our propulsion system, but gyrocopters are. We didn't invent gyrocopters, they were designed by Mr. De La Sierva from Spain in 1914. So many years ago, and those aircrafts, you can get certified right now. You go to Austria, by the way, you're right there, you can fly gyrocopters. I don't know if you have seen some of those. Look like a helicopter, they're a little bit lighter. They've been working for so many years. They've been certified for so many years. So while our competitors on the eVTOL, electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicles market, they're not able to get certified right now because there's no regulation that they can go and follow. But for gyrocopters, exist. So it would be way easier for us to go and certify that gyrocopter with our propulsion system. And that's what we got. Very strategic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Speaking of your low cost, right? You said even the pilot is already included in that. Mm-hmm. How are you able to keep those costs that low? Because I can imagine, are those real fully educated pilots, or is it more like you educate them, like as you have written on your website, and basically everyone can simply take that course, and it's so easy to navigate that you don't need to go through college, like doing all that stuff?
Yeah, so there's two faults in here. Number one, their cost to produce the aircraft is less than $250,000 in the assembly line. So that lowers the cost exponentially. Now, the operations, well, they made less maintenance, very low cost. So how we dare to say that we are able to pay $40 per hour to a pilot? Well, they might be thinking $100, but we're going to take people, young people like you, that can speak English, that have good sight. We're going to train them. We're going to pay for their course, number one. If you try to be a pilot today, it's going to cost you around $13,000 just to have a private pilot license. So you go first a sport license, then you go private pilot, and then you go commercial. So with the commercial, you're going to need few more hours than the 70 hours that you're going to use as a private pilot. So we're going to pay for that. Why? Because our cost of operation is so low. Mm-hmm. And we need to burn hours. We need to show the Civil Aviation Authority, EASA or FAA, your Canadian Civil Aviation Authority, hey, we flew 700 hours, no problems. Or we found this, or we found that, and we corrected in this way. Great. Mm-hmm. So that's a path to get through the commercial. So the commercial is the time that I'm going to be able to, for they will charge you for a service.
Okay. That's actually, now what I'm thinking of, from a business perspective, it could be really interesting, and I wonder if you're thinking about this or considering this. Do you plan to make a franchise out of that, or is it more like you want to own them all and scale it that way?
So different layers. So we are the technical guys that are gonna, or people that are gonna make this technology broad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So technology is one part. The other part will be the industrialization, which is where we assemble the aircrafts, and then the commercialization. We're not gonna have time for the commercialization. Mm-hmm. We're gonna be very involved on the initial part of the infrastructure to assemble. But once that machine is operational, that's it. The quality management system will take over, the safety management system will take over, and that will take care of itself. That will somebody else will take care of. Of course, we're gonna be very much involved in the first ones. But when that works, when we have all the processes and procedures for the infrastructure, we can just copy, paste it, and implement it in different parts of the world. So we're gonna be like the Renault 4 from France. So we're gonna be like Cinquecento from Italy, that everybody is a everyone's aircraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Quick intermission. If I could ask you for one single favor, it would be that you hit subscribe onto this channel, because it helps our channel more than you can imagine. And, you know, the bigger the channel gets, the bigger the guests get. So thank you very much for watching, and let's continue with the episode. Let me think. Just, you know, what I'm missing here a little bit is like, you have that super awesome electric vehicle, basically. But is there, you know, in entrepreneurship, especially when building technical solutions, it's never linear, you know, it's always huge ups, huge downs, all that struggle that comes along with it. And I just, you know, that's usually what's really interesting. Like, what were some of your downs, you know, like that you overcame, of course, right? Because mm-hmm. you're now where you are. But what were some surprising challenges that you faced along the way? Be it about licensing, the business model, the technical side of things, whatever. I just would love to get a little bit under the hood, if that's possible.
Got it. So all the challenges, let me tell you something. We already spent 26,000 engineering and design hours. We already did all the testing of the aerodynamics and fluid dynamics. So we know this is gonna fly. But we are aeronautical engineers. Yeah, we know this thing, and maybe not everybody's cookie that this is gonna work, because unless they see it, they will believe it. But since we already make it work in a scale model, an aircraft this size, it flew at 60 miles per hour, we already know it's going to work. So all the challenges, of course, we got a lot. Yeah. But we solved them during the process. We solved, for example, the batteries. What happens if the batteries explode? Mm-hmm. They're externally ventilated. So even if they explode, there's no fumes in the cabin. Fine. They're independent. One can burn, the one beside, it won't. So all these things, the one problem that we need to think, do we find a solution? That's what engineers do, solve problems.
Love it.
The physics are solved. The patent has been granted, mathematics, physics, that's done. The challenge we're gonna have on the assembly. So the way this works is we're gonna produce a full size first model of the propulsion system, and we're gonna find problems. Let's say we're gonna come out with 100 points that we need to improve. We do the second version of the model, and then we're gonna find a few. Once we have the third one, we should have all the problems solved. And that's the one that gets certified. The same process we're gonna do with the aircraft, but that's how it works. So are we gonna have problems? Yes. Do we count with those problems? Yes. Are we gonna have the money and the time to solve the problems? Are we gonna have the team for that? Those are my problems. That's gonna be—
Of course, that's part of business, right? I have no doubt that you solved all those problems. I just was more curious about, like, what were one of the biggest challenges that you have already solved? Like, mm-hmm. for example, when you talked about the battery, that's interesting. You know, those are engineering problems that your company has solved, your team has solved. And of course, I understand that you don't want to share everything now. It's completely mm-hmm. fine, right? It's a first mover advantage, it's patented and all these kind of things. But what was that moment where you thought, oh man, I don't know how we are going to fix this, and then you fixed it. Like, what was that moment? Was there one?
Let's talk about a little bit on the business side. So we were married with a 2-passenger because we want to train people affordably. Mm-hmm. But when we realized, look, it's only 2-passenger, and if we want to sell the services, then we need to recertify a brand new aircraft. No. Let's go straight with a 3-passenger, 1 pilot. Also, so that was the moment that we need to make this affordable for the people, but as well, we need to be a profitable company. This needs to be make a lot of money because the investors are looking for returns. Mm-hmm. And in that way, we solve many other problems, and we come up with some versions for not even passengers, but just an emergency services ambulance. So it's 2 beds, 1 pilot, one aerial medic. Fire department. We solve things like how are we going to land in snow in very cold weather operations? So we need to put mm-hmm. skis.
Skis, like, okay.
Yeah, so maybe when you go, I'll show you one. This is a red aircraft that we did for very cold weather operations in Canada. So these kind of things are now how are we going to open the doors if they're frozen? Mm-hmm. And so our doors are going to open upwards mm-hmm. Because it makes more sense to for emergency services to carry people from the bottom up.
Interesting.
So what, let me think about another problem. So we got a big problem in the cabin. Mm-hmm. So it's a gigantic cylinder in the middle of the 2 passengers. Mm-hmm. So it takes a space, but that's the propulsion system. It's not that we can get rid of it. So we use it, but there's enough space for 2 passengers on each side, but we use it for comfort. So we're going to be able to put some luxurious things, and it creates a nice feeling in the environment inside. All the materials are top-notch. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is not ideal, but we have to deal with. We have to live with that.
Sure, that part of the game, right? Every engine has its drawbacks and upsides. That's normal. Yeah.
Right. That's it. I think that would be a good answer for your question.
Like, speaking of those doors and the skis, mm-hmm. I could imagine that, and you mentioned it already anyway, that it could be really interesting for emergency services, right? When someone mm-hmm. Is in the mountains, has an accident, these kind of things, right? Because a huge helicopter usually definitely can't land, right? Then you have this, mm-hmm. I was an ambulance man and
a hoist.
Like, yeah, you have all that equipment, right? But with your solution, it of course depends, right? If you can fit a human in laid down in your vehicle, mm-hmm. but if that's possible, that could be a really, I don't know, interesting use case as well to save lives, or am I wrong?
Definitely. Emergency services look for solutions, for example, where we're going to put the camera to find the thermal camera. Mm-hmm. So to find humans or animals as well, that they're underneath the snow. So how to geolocate that, how to send other emergency services, how to save their lives. In very cold weather operation is very tricky because helicopters, whenever there's more than, let's say, 20 kilometers of winds, you will be reluctant to go to that area or to that shape of the mountain. But with gyrocopters, the more wind you have, the better the aircraft flies. So as an example. We are in an airport, we have a small fixed wing aircraft, we have a small helicopter, we have our aircraft, we have a big business jet. For 20 kilometers winds, 3 of them, they're not going to be able to fly. On us, 30 kilometers winds, 40 kilometers wind, which is kind of almost hurricane wind, mm-hmm. we can take off and go do our mission. So the extreme weather is a real extreme weather. Mm-hmm. So we're able to add value there.
That's cool. Okay. Yeah, well, speaking of that, when are they available on the market? Like, when are you flying around in the US? Do you have a plan?
In the US. So we're gonna be looking forward to have two hubs, one in the US and another one in Montreal, Canada. That's the plan for 2024. Okay. We're expecting some funds from a couple of investors. With that, we're going to be able to realize that the US government is going to, we're going to get some government contracts for research. With that, I will say July, we should be able to show the world the full size propulsion system. Give me 6 more months, so 12 months from now. December, we're going to be show the full size aircraft.
Okay, exciting. Yeah, cool stuff. Well, if I have one last question for you. So, sure. Are there 3 things that you would like people to remember from this cool episode? Like, could be around your, like, why electric vehicles are superior, or why you should consider using them, or general things you just want to leave here, whatever.
One thing is that I would like to encourage people to become entrepreneurs. Innovation technology is what changed the world. And I believe that it's a way to solve the biggest problems in the world today. The second thing is that we're a startup. Nobody knows who we are. And we very much appreciate what you're doing for us. We need to get our eyes, more eyes on us. We need to let the world know that we exist, and there's going to be a solution feasible that is profitable in the very, very near future that is certifiable. Supporting social media, help a lot with investors, help a lot with traction, help a lot, because we're going to be in a market where huge companies in billions of valuation are going to be. And we are just a small startup with 14 engineers working very hard with not enough resources. And that's why it took us so long to make this happen, because we didn't have all the millions that all the big manufacturers had. So your support is very much important and very much appreciated.
And you made it. You know, that's the even cooler thing, you know, about all of that. Despite, you know, as you said, limited resources, that's a startup life, you know, and we did it. That's cool. And just one last thing that I remember from a podcast, I think with Lex Fridman and Elon Musk, where he asked if Elon also wants to start with electric aircraft as well. And he said, I'm thinking a lot about that stuff, but my brain would explode, you know, right now. So I think you're safe in that regard as well. So all the best, mate. Was a pleasure talking with you. Super cool stuff. And yeah.
Kevin, thank you so much for this. Really appreciate this. Thank you for your support and all the amazing questions you did. Thank you for your to share this with your community. We're very grateful. Thank you so much.
Hi everyone, I hope you liked the episode. So if you liked it, please do me one single favor, hit the subscribe button or engage with this post, like, commenting, everything helps, because the more engagement we get, the more subscribers we have, the better and the bigger the guests will become. So thank you very much for watching, and yeah, Ernesto, I think, is quite happy with this episode. So am I, and yeah. If you have any feedback for us, let us know. We're always up for improvement. And yeah.
Wave Act, the web-free software company that understands what you want.